9 at Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with music and the truth until dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. It's 12 o'clock, Americans, another day closer to victory. And for all of you out there on or behind the lines, this is your song.
Now, you cut that fence and get this platoon on the move!
Well, listen, you crummy, flat-footed copper, I'll show you whether I lost my nerve and my brains.
Man, we like to feel that we can get out of trouble quicker than we got into it.
I'm not fighting for anything anymore except myself. I'm the only cause I'm interested in.
How's it going, everyone? This is TJ Martinell at tjmartinell.com. Thank you for listening to the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. I'm coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. The date is May 25th, 2022, another 15 days to flatten the curve here in the state of Washington. This is the Madhouse episode. And you might be intrigued by this episode. You may find it fascinating. You may find it enlightening. It's not going to be a very funny one. And that's okay. Because, of course, I was not planning on doing this podcast until I heard about what happened yesterday. For most of you who are tuning into this, you probably heard about the shooting at a Texas school. And I'm not going to talk specifically about the shooting itself because I don't have all the facts. And believe me when I say I haven't been a reporter, we're not going to hear all the facts, at least for a while. But this goes back to, frankly, the reason I'm doing this episode is because all the different episodes I've been doing for the past couple of days or weeks has really led up to the context of what I'm going to talk about. As far as why is this happening? And one of the ways that you can understand that is it goes back to that, I guess, real life Voight-Kampff test thing I talk about is, look at people's reactions. The reaction from a lot of people is somebody, from what I understand, some 18-year-old took guns and shot relatives and then went and shot a bunch of children at school and then continued shooting until he was taken out by a Border Patrol agent who showed up. And the question that I don't really see anybody asking, and they probably are, but the question is, why did he do it? Instead, we're having arguments about how he did it. And if you want to, if you're pressed for time or you're starting to get bored, just understand, this is the point of the podcast, is that is the problem. Like, therein you have the root cause of the problem. There's no discussion about how this kind of behavior is antithetical or at odds with our society's values. And I hear people talk about how we can't have this be the norm and we can't have school children. And I'm trying to be respectful as much as possible for what is an absolute tragedy, as well as a heinous crime. We're at the point when I'm going to just point out what people, I think a lot of people don't want to talk about, is the way we have things set up in our society and culture creates this stuff. And if you're wondering, well, what kind of stuff? There is no one thing. There is no one thing that pushes somebody over the edge like this. It is a combination of things. It is a multitude of different things that lead up to the point where they get pushed over the edge. You know, people can point out guns, or they can point out the prescription drugs that he probably was. I would put some decent money on the idea that he was on, or on the bet that he was on drugs. and that this is, we're starting to see patterns here. It's all men. It's all young men. There are no female shooters. And there are this isn't because men are bad or more disposed towards doing evil. It's because that's how men express themselves under the circumstances that we have them put under. Women will express their being pushed off the edge in this way in different ways. There's the broken homes, the dysfunctional family relationships, the things that we rationalize instead of pointing out that this isn't okay. You know, how many, I think the United States has some of the highest rates of, I guess in the Western world, number of children who don't live with both parents. And we think that this is okay. And people, instead of pointing out this isn't normal and it shouldn't be normalized, people come up with reasons for why it is. A justification for, on an individual level. Just the same way we come up with individual excuses for why we put kids on drugs. Another thing that we can note is that this is all happening at government public schools. These are not happening at private schools. These are not happening at charter schools. These are not happening at Catholic schools. You know, and those, you know, years ago, those were the places where the nuns were harsh and strict and they were, you know, slapping people's. I mean, frankly, years ago, when some of my relatives were going to a public school, it was acceptable for a teacher to slap a student's hand with a ruler if they were misbehaving. Now, of course, people would freak out over that because that's a teacher enforcing healthy discipline. This is the issue, guys, is it's not that we are okay, not okay with violence and aggression and coercion. It's all unhealthy. Right. A kid holds his pencil like a gun and he's being arrested by the police. That happened a couple of years ago. Right. But God forbid the teacher actually tells students, you know, that certain types of behavior is not acceptable or teach any kind of meaningful moral conduct. And on top of that, it goes with the podcast I did on the Unthinkable podcast, where I was talking about how there's a lot of area, like we emasculate men. Healthy expressions of aggression and violence are considered just pearl clutching. I mean, it's an environment that is done to cater to the emotional comfort of a 75-year-old woman who needs a fainting couch and, you know, a fainting salts or whatever they're called. And so when people, it's like somebody complaining about how, you know, their floor is rotting and they keep wanting to replace the floor, but they don't want to deal with why the floor is rotting, because you have a leak in your pipe system. Like, this is the product of a feminized, feminized society. Right, in a healthy masculine, in a society that prioritizes masculine values or norms, when men get frustrated, that's the thing. The other thing that we see is that men can express their aggression in healthy ways. They can express themselves towards each other in ways that are going to allow them to just get stuff off their chest. And I mean, I kind of saw that growing up, and that wasn't even in a public school, where what happens is when you have, this is not specifically for this person, but I guarantee you this man did not grow up with a, how many of these kids grew up with a healthy father, relationship with her father. And people will come up with, well, you know, it's not their fault. I understand it's not their fault. That is the problem. This is the confusion people have. This is an issue of if they don't have something in their life, good or bad, it's a problem. When a boy, and I would say also, I'd say both children in both cases, men, sons and daughters, when you don't have a father, your father in your life, your biological father, for reasons that are justified or not, it doesn't matter. It's like being in an area where you need a car and you can't drive your car because it's broken, and that's a legitimate reason why you're not driving it. It doesn't change the fact that you need that car. And this is why we take so many kids are being put on drugs, is because this is our way of dealing, or the way people are dealing with problems that they don't want to address. This is a way of avoiding dealing with a problem. And we know this because this is why they obsess over the means by which they do it. Somebody goes and shoots up a school, and nobody sits down to say, like, what is causing people to conclude that this is not only okay, but the kind of death wish that it invites? This problem is not going to go away. It's not going to go away because people are continuing to just double down on coming up with some sort of a scapegoat for why this is going on. And I mean, if someone were to come up to me, you know, the whole gun debate, and they'd say, well, TJ, you know, guns, you know, you gun owner. I saw some guy tweeting out that if you are a gun owner, you're part of the problem. I'm like, dude, a kid raised in a government school in a broken home, shot up as a result of our either divorce laws or the way that we raise men and women today, went and shot up a bunch of kids at a government school. Like, this is all on you guys. This stuff is the product and creation of your world. Because we don't live in the world that men like myself would prefer to live in. Not the kind of society we would prefer to live in, not the kind of culture we would prefer to live in. And there's no way for me to verify this directly, but from what I've read, it indicates that this kid, there were tons of warning signs and nobody dealt with it. Again, why do you think that is? Because nobody feels actually responsible for too many people feel like, I'll give an example of what I'm talking about here, where nobody is responsible for the upbringing of a young man. Years ago, I was covering a sexual assault case at a high school when I was a reporter for the city. And I had a few ears inside the school. So a group of kids were basically engaging in a very disturbing hazing ritual of a student. And the police got called. I mean, you could all read this story if you wanted to dig it up, you know, all that stuff. But from what I heard, when the parents were brought in and the school administrators were talking to them about it, you would think that the parents would be ashamed, embarrassed, appalled. What do you think their reaction was? They were furious at the school administrators, because it was the school administrator's job to teach these kids not to engage in a very weird, bizarre, disturbing hazing ritual. I mean, this was the reaction and I've had principals tell me when I was doing education stories as a reporter, where he's saying one of the difficulties of being a teacher now is the parents think that it's your job to teach their kids basic stuff like manners and etiquette and keep them from, you see what I mean? These kids engaged in a, a completely inappropriate behavior. And the parents, instead of taking that out on their kids, say, you know, like basically holding them morally accountable, say it was the school's fault. And also not holding themselves accountable. Like, who, let's say that this kid, this shooter, who was responsible? Who was responsible for the failure to properly raise this child into adulthood? Who was responsible? I mean, this is what a government, a state education system does. It strips the parent of authority. And in doing so, the parent's like, okay, well, I'm not responsible. That's not my job. And in my opinion, that's a completely unhealthy, weird, dysfunctional, dystopian way of looking at raising children. You know, in my opinion, you can have schools, but most of a child's education should come from the parent. We're in a completely different world. We're in a world that is probably not going to come about anytime soon. A world where parents are directly raising their own children. And I'm not talking about homeschooling. I don't like the word homeschooling. Homeschooling implies that the kids are being sheltered and they're not being taught good stuff. I'm talking about where the parents are assuming direct responsibility and directly overseeing the education and instruction of their own child. And so kids can pick up on this stuff. They're perceptive. They can tell that nobody really cares about, like, the school system. You think the school system sees themselves as ultimately responsible for a child's education and upbringing? You know, is anybody taking responsibility and saying this was on us? Instead, we see people blaming men like myself. Now, I'm not saying directly. They're saying these group of people in our society are causing this problem, rather than the people who are responsible. But that's the question I would keep asking, is who is responsible for raising this kid? And everybody gets to point fingers at someone else other than themselves and take responsibility. Because we have a dysfunctional, broken relationship between parents, their children, and the state. And I'm not sure what the education system was like in the Soviet Union, but you gotta wonder if it was more functional. I think it was probably just more honest. I mean, I think that that's the one of the causes of people going insane or just becoming mentally ill in America, is we say we're one thing, but we're actually not. We're something else. You know, people think that their kids belong to them, whereas there's many teachers out there who think their children belong to them. And nobody's thinking about what's best for the kid. And once more, this is not the only problem. Like, if you were to abolish government schools and return back to education tomorrow, that would not solve the problem. You still have lots of people who are just not fit to be parents, having children. And then when it's time, and then when the kid is a disaster, it's almost like everybody enables each other's dysfunctional behavior when it comes to raising children. And I think that the result of this is that you have a situation where we need to be very precise with this. This is where many kids do not know what it's like to feel loved. They may be loved in a very disjointed way, but they do not feel loved. They don't feel like their inner life matters. They feel like they're not able to express or say what they think. And they feel like nobody cares. I was reading a newsletter that came out. I'm trying to remember his name. Mark. It was Mark. I think it's Mark Bovier. You can find him on Twitter. You're all smart people. He did a newsletter and he talked about how he's playing soccer with his kids. There's a soccer game, so he's there watching with it. And he's talking to this grandmother who is overseeing the upbringing of her autistic grandson. The father's incapacitated due to a medical condition. The grandmother's like in her 70s. And the mother of this, her grandson, left. So nobody was taking care of this boy. Like, no one was looking out for him. And she's, you know, doing a very noble thing. She's helping this kid out, showing that somebody actually cares. You know, this is her twilight years, and she's having to parent. And her fear is that if anything should happen to her, she's told Mark this in the newsletter. If I die, no one's going to care for this kid. I think that that's another thing that is the case for a lot of people where they really feel like they're on their own. And I, frankly, I could spend an hour talking about all the different problems that I think contribute to this sense of despair. But an example of that is, yeah, the kids don't feel loved. And then when they feel hopeless, people lash out at them. And my belief is that they lash out at them because they feel convicted. There's something wrong with someone who, when they see someone struggling and depressed or despondent, their reaction is to lash out, as opposed to providing comfort or encouragement. And frankly, it just reinforces what the child already suspects, that nobody cares. Because someone who cares about someone who's discouraged wants to encourage rather than just yell or get angry. Because I think people instinctively understand that that a child is reflecting, and yeah, I'll just say it. They're reflecting and conveying what they see. Or it's a reflection of how it's a reflection of the environment that they're in. And no, I'm not the parenting expert. I'm not Dr. Phil. I'm not Dr. Phil in the blank, random guy on TV who's going to sit here and talk about being a parent. I'm just looking at saying when someone is showing signs that they are not okay, like, who feels obligation to help them out? I mean, this is reminds me of what a buddy of mine who fought in some of the recent conflicts. He came back and he said, the most difficult thing for me, because I was asking, you know, I'm very much intrigued with combat and veterans, and I've talked to a lot of them, and I'm curious because I've never been in combat, and you know, at some points in my life, I considered joining the military, but just decided not to. And I'm at the age where it's kind of, yes, I could go join and do a technical job, I guess is that, but it was just a fascination I've had. And I've always asked him, like, you know, what is it like coming back here? Cause we were living in a suburb of Seattle. And he said, one of the most difficult things was out in the field. I knew that someone was always watching my back. Someone was always watching my six. Someone was always watching my rear. I knew that if I was in need of help, someone was there. He said, then I left the Army or the Corps. I can't remember which one it was, but he said, then I was on my own. Like, if I fell in the gutter, I alone would be I'd be the only person who'd care about getting me back on my feet. Rambo made that comment in the movie First Blood. I was just watching that And he, you know, he said, in the field, we had a code of honor. You watch my back, I watch yours. Back here, civilian life doesn't have that. And as much as people bash the idea of like, this is also the result of an atomized, hyper-individualistic society. And I'm very much big on individualism and being an individual. And frankly, if I wasn't individualistic by nature, I would not be doing the stuff that I'm doing. But I don't think people who grew up a long time ago in communities where family ties had meaning. I mean, this is, I think, why people stuck with family. And sometimes it wasn't great. I mean, you can go read about Davy Crockett's upbringing, where he ran away from home and he was gone for 2 years. The man lived a very fascinating life. And then he came back home and his dad was a harsh man. He was not, it was a very complicated relationship. You know, his dad would hire his kids out to pay off his debts. And then, you know, after all this, like the conflict between the two, then Davy Crockett, he never liked actually being called Davy. He wanted to be called David, but he's dead. So he's not listening unless he's up in heaven, listening to the podcast. He ended up actually taking on work to pay off his dad's debts. And so I remember reading the biography and it was talking about the Scots-Irish and, you know, the author was talking about how very few of them ever immigrated to America by themselves. You know, you immigrated as a basically a clan, a group of an extended family came together. I'm another example of this. I keep stressing, there is no one thing that's causing this stuff. It is a deep systemic problem, and the rot goes so far down, most people do not want to lift up that carpet. Because let's break down a little bit about the purpose of the family unit, right? You have the father, you have the mother, you have the children, you have the grandparents. You have aunts and uncles and cousins. Like, these all have very distinct and important roles in each other's life. And as much as people argue against how blood is thicker than water or how that's not true and stuff, guys, this is not, that is the result of our society today. Because I know a lot of guys who don't really have much of a, they really don't emphasize familial bonds. They really don't emphasize familial ties. And in some circumstances, I get why that is. But here's the problem with that. It's like a guy who or someone who has to, you know, let's say that since I've talked about mental illness, let's say that there's a man, his wife is mentally ill and she has to be forcibly incarcerated. It's necessary. It is the only responsible thing to do. But don't pretend like that's not having negative effects anyways on your child. This is like someone who has a gangrene on a limb and you have to cut off the limb to save your body. It's necessary. That doesn't mean it didn't cost you. And it's not the natural normal state. So what does this have to do with school shootings? It has to do with the context in which these things are occurring. The way that the deprivation of meaningful relationships. I mean, why do you think so many people spend so much of their time online talking to strangers? Because the familial bonds with each other have been over a long period of time and through all these different ways, they've been broken or disconnected. And, you know, what's causing this? Was this on purpose? That is completely irrelevant to the point I'm making. We can talk about, like, was this planned? Was this deliberate? Or was this just a natural course of history? The development of modern technology and all that other kind of stuff. Yes. But don't point at what's going on, the way we have things in the world today, and tell me it's normal. It's all unnatural. And this is the part where it's not a very happy thing to say. There's no fixing it or putting the toothpaste back into the tube. What you see is a lot of people who are trying to have discussions about how to solve this stuff, but none of them are willing to question all the stuff that I just talked about. And this is probably more a more pertinent question for people who continue to send their kids to public schools. But the thing is that that's one type of shooter. Then there's the guys who just snap. And the only thing I can tell you is, if you're of legal age, conceal carry, have situational awareness, and know that these things are, the more and more society becomes, this is where I'm actually really, I don't want to say worried, but where I'm just like, I see the train wreck. Look at what's going on in public schools now with the teachers that they have now. What do you think is going to happen with all those young men when they get to be 18? What's going to happen to all those kids who have had permanent, irreversible surgeries as part of transitioning? Then they get to be an adult. And they realize what's happened. What happens when all these kids who've been raised under COVID get old enough where they can start crunching the numbers and realizing that they were deprived of meaningful life experiences that you can't replicate? They're not repeatable. Very pivotal years of their lives, they were spent in lockdown. They were isolated from their friends. They were forced to wear masks. And it was all over a relatively harmless virus that affected the elderly and people who are obese. I mean, there is going to be a lot of anger, and the more society tries to repress it, the more it's going to be expressed in destructive and explosive ways. And the best thing you can do for your own, you know, for mental health is to just not denying reality causes problems. Refusing to deal with unpleasant truths is going to cause problems. And this kind of situation, like, you know, what. In an ideal world, what would happen? Well, in an ideal world, young men would be allowed to engage in regular roughhousing. Their men would be teaching boys how to be men. And after a certain age, they would be surrounded primarily by older men and male role models and male mentors. You know, in Athens, ancient Athens, the boys were raised by their, you know, different type of slavery than in America, just for context. But the slaves of the household, they were assigned a slave who would mentor them and teach them, like, right from wrong and all that stuff. Like, that, the society had their issues in other areas. But this is the point, is that they were being taught by a specific man how to be a man. And this person had direct responsibility over them. So we have to get back to the issue of who is responsible for raising a young man and teaching him how to be a man. We don't literally explicitly say this in our society, but we absolutely teach that men, boys, need to be taught how to be a girl by women. In institutions where feminine is the norm, and where men who are masculine are considered to be dysfunctional, and masculine ways of expressing things are bad. And as the saying goes, when masculinity is outlawed, only outlaws will be masculine. So in an ideal society, you would have these young men would have mentors. They would have somebody who's specifically looking out for them, watching their rear, covering their six, having their back. So that we should always be able to say when a young man is not where he's supposed to be in life, we should be able to say when we ask who's responsible, there needs to be a specific answer. I mean, in one way, that this is the cause of everybody wanting to have their cake and eat it too. They want to have the authority without the responsibility. Or they, you know, for parents, a lot of parents don't want to, based on what I hear from principals I've heard over the years, a lot of parents just, they have kids and then they think it's the school's job to raise them and teach them everything. So then when the kid's getting into trouble, it's like, well, you know, they see the school as basically a daycare. We need to understand the difference between healthy violence and aggression and unhealthy violence and aggression. You know, two boys getting into a fist fight and then shaking hands afterwards, that's healthy aggression and violence and should not be discouraged. Boys wanting to basically act in rage, genuinely try and like hurt, seriously hurt or maim or kill, that's not healthy. We just need to allow more roughhousing. We need to allow more expressions of math for more expressions of, aggression, male aggression in a healthy way. These are just one of many things that would need to change, but instead we're talking about guns. And the conversation is going to be stuck on that because that's a debate where there is the reason why we're talking about that stuff is because that's an area where there's actual conflict. But try pointing out the way that the nuclear family has been completely obliterated in Western American society and how that needs to change. And watch how quickly people will close ranks and start defending the status quo. I mean, we stick people in a madhouse and then wonder why they go mad. It's like putting someone in a room with a nuclear reactor and wondering why they have radiation poisoning. Giving them lead in their food and wondering why they have lead poisoning. So I hope you found that interesting or thought-provoking or something to reflect on and contemplate if you're ever having discussions with people about this stuff. So I think that's basically my closing thoughts. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room, my Fortress Americana, and the heart of Cascadia, signing off.